Thank you. While this is loading, I think there are many of us that are grateful that the society has recognized mine land reclamation and more generally the whole world of disturbed soils, known in some circles as anthropogenic, anthropomorphic, and a whole new vocabulary that we're seeing in that area. 75 years of mine land reclamation reports. I thought it was going to start out to be a fairly easy topic to discuss. So I started out with this picture of a soil, what's come to be known as in many circles as a mine soil. Here we've got two soil scientists. There is a gray card off in the distance that we use to kind of distinguish this multivariable variegated from top to bottom. Here's a spoil pile. Hear a lot of people talking about spoil piles, and there's spoils from all kinds of industry anymore, road construction, urban excavation, and on and on. Again, I started out looking at coal mine land reclamation. That's where I got my start as a bright young analytical chemist in a laboratory in the late 60s, walking around in some of these kinds of materials. This is a photograph I took in 1970. This area is now an 1,100-acre wildlife preserve, gated community. You can buy a lot there. And going out in the field and helping these folks get samples for soil, plant, and rock analyses. So I started out with the coal business. Mine land reclamation has diffuse boundaries. If you go to any of the geological literature, you can find nice straight line map delineated areas where there's coal and where you would expect there's mining and reclamation. Very rapidly, I got into, not all coal mine reclamation looks, and reclamation and mining looks like the first two pictures. We've got tailings from metal mines, phosphate mines, a lot of spots around the country. I tried to summarize this, and certainly you'll excuse me for omitting some of these small pockets that we have over here in California and over New Hampshire and wherever. And we kind of degenerated into chemically contaminated soils. Well, I don't want to get into that because I spent too many years dealing with hazardous waste Superfund kinds of field sites. But indeed, we have a big 20-mile stretch here in Idaho of mine tailings, which are being reclaimed and which I believe some of our earlier speakers referred to. Again, that's a whole new topic we don't have all day. Back to the original title, which was easy. No studies reported until 1945. Ed Tyner, who later moved on to Illinois, Dick Smith, published in the journal in 1945 the reclamation of coal strip mine lands. Study they started in late 1942, see what would grow on the hills of mine land in West Virginia. And we didn't see much again until 1957. Hal Wilson, a microbiologist, was looking at aggregation. He went on to do some studies in the 60s in microbiology of mine lands. I thought I'd end the talk here, but I can't. We had a high of 23 articles in the 5-year period, 81 to 86. Was that the proceedings or the journal? I kind of grouped them. Total of 80 articles is all I found from 1945 up to this past summer. You see some gaps here, zero publications in the journal. And kind of spotty. Note these are 5-year time segments, so I got bigger numbers, actually. Let's look at the last line here. Lots of publication activity resulting from support and studies begun in the late 1970s. Money helps you do work, and there was a lot of soil scientists out there recognize the legislation, EPA, Surface Mining Conservation Reclamation Act in the late 70s, and with EPA starting to fund all kinds of environmental studies, we saw that when JEQ began publication in 72, we started picking up a lot more research, a lot more publications. Superfund amendments of the 80s put more money into the grant programs, and we had somebody at just about every state university and many other little places that could find disturbed land of any sort were absorbing this source of resources and doing a lot of good work. This particular plot I put on an annual basis. A few missing years here, 1974, 1976. I didn't find any articles in JEQ, but boy, look at total of 280. Going through the examining table of contents, abstracts, and so forth, there was a little bit of difficulty in separating out mined land reclamation reports. So I used a little bit of judgment there where they talked about tailings or something like that, or mined land. They mentioned phosphate. I went back looking at the abstract and made the decision, do I fit it in or don't I? Well, that's kind of really shows that people have been working. That's what it says. Soil scientists also published this topic in 13 or 14 other outlets. You see our Canadian colleagues are noticed there. A lot of sort of industry conferences, American Society of Surface Mine Reclamation, Canadian Land Reclamation Association. I believe I forgot our forestry friends, our forest soils people have been working in land reclamation of all types since the late 40s, as far back as I can find. Certainly in the 50s and the 60s, there was a lot of forestry work done on disturbed lands. What if we're going to jump into it today? What do we do? Where do we learn something about that? Well, this history, there's a lot in here, but boy, that's a long, hard road to hoe to go through all that kind of information. Look through JEQ, American Society for Mining and Reclamation, Canadian Land Reclamation Association. Canadians, of course, are very heavy into tar sands, reclamation, disturbance, environmental situations. These are annual or biannual meetings. I believe Dick Barnheisel in Kentucky is still heavily involved in ASMR. That started back in the early 80s. There are a lot of state organizations, industry-sponsored organizations, international organizations. I talked to John Galbraith down at VPI on the IUSS Working Group, taxonomy, which is moving right along on anthropogenic soils of all sorts. The Society has put out two books, 1978 by Schaller and Paul Sutton. Paul Sutton did a lot of early reclamation work in eastern Ohio in coal mines, a Worcester, Ohio conference. And in 2000, Dick Barnheisel, Bob Darmody, and Daniels put monograph number 41 out. I'm not sure if these books are available. I guarantee you, pretty much if you go to your local favorite land-grant university, big library, they'll have copies. That's what I do. One of my early conferences I had the privilege to attend to was this one held at Penn State in 1969, finally published in 1973 by this New York publisher, International Conference on Drastically Disturbed Lands. And, of course, the outlets, various journals I mentioned, Vidos Zone Journal and so forth in an earlier slide. Oops, that's the back button. Our mandate was talk about the history and projecting the future. So I got my crystal ball and put it alongside the sharpshooter and said, now I can tell. We've seen in the past a lot of studies of vegetation. What will grow in this land? There's all kinds of studies, grass, microorganisms, acid drainage, saline situations. Fewer, irrespective of need, in my opinion, on soil physical aspects. And we heard about soil physics earlier today, and I'm glad that they are out there. They need to divert themselves, in my opinion, towards some of these other kinds of lands. Water relations, droughtiness, coarse fragments, surface crust. You find everything, some, none, or all of these features in the soil physical system of a disturbed land. A mined spoil, a mined soil. So what do we need? Properties and classification. Classification is enjoyed a good bit of work in the disturbed land, the land reclamation area. You need to know where you are, what you've got to work with. You've got to measure properties. In many cases, samples go off to the soil testing lab, and they give you a Bray phosphorus, a 1-to-1 water pH, or whatever the ag soils give you. And then you've got to interpret that for this miscellaneous rock pile. Site-specific mapping for new land uses. There are not a whole lot of mined lands or disturbed soils in general that are into the new land use state of mind. Soil chemistry reactions are always there because every pit you dig, every pet on, every pet is going to be a little different. Soil scientists can, should, must. That's the way I wrote it. I don't know of any other professional who has got the sound basic education, the experience, the broad education, biology, chemistry, physics, mapping, instrumentation, geology, you name it. Just about every soil scientist I know has got that sound foundation and peripheral experience and education that he can go out there and put together the information needed on a site or on an area or on a region. The yellow note at the bottom is kind of a bee in my bonnet. Urgent needs, integration with the construction, design, and engineering community. I've worked with engineers for many, many years, many decades, as a matter of fact, trying to get soil chemistry involved in some of their engineering designs and construction projects. It's always been uphill, but in the end, by golly, the plateau at the top has been really neat. And I believe we've accomplished a lot. I'd like to refer you to this. We started back in 1945 with a reclamation study in the state of West Virginia. West Virginia is an exciting place. They had this EPA project come out in March 2011, relative to mountaintop removal, aquatic ecosystem study. Buried way down in there is this figure that they took from a Hook publication in the 1990s, which I found very interesting. Earth movement by humans and streams. Map of the United States showing by variations in peak height the rates at which Earth is moved in gigatons per annum in a grid cell measuring 1 degree latitude, 1 degree longitude on a side by A in humans. Earth moved by humans, Earth moved by rivers. Just kind of digest this generally. Don't try to read in the fine print. Look at the concept. People are moving a lot of ground per year. I did some arithmetic, and of course, the top of their y-axis here is a tenth. 1 gigaton per annum, my arithmetic says, is 2 feet thick. So a tenth of that over here, that could be Appalachia coal mining. I don't know. maybe it's urban construction. But that comes out, where'd my pointer go? This peak here comes out to 2 feet thick on a 1 degree by 1 degree grid every year. A lot of bulldozer activity, by golly. I invite you to go back, look up that reference, and study it better than I did. Classification, if you don't know what we've got to work with, we can't really go too much further. This is a 1974 picture of analog vacuum gauge tensiometers in a somewhat vegetated mine soil. Early classifications were kind of simple. That's the way they did it in the 40s and the 50s, and it at least distinguished the farmer's field from pits and dumps, and land capability started creeping in. Adapted agronomists started helping us out. Miscellaneous is still kind of a scratch your head. Where are we today? We've got all these new words by the taxonomists out there. Soil series, back in the early 2000s, Alan Cossey out in Illinois, he noticed 43 named series on disturbed mined land soils. Icomanth there is probably about the most up-to-date in this classification area. I looked at this critical issues that the Society put out early in 2011. What does mined land and reclamation have to do with any of that? Well, ag on unused lands, you can grow a lot of food on a lot of those acres, different foods. Leachate quality, nutrients, you can read this list. Biodiversity, it's there. Global perspective, there's disturbed lands, mined lands, anthropogenic acres everywhere in the world. I like this old expression I learned someplace in my travels. If it doesn't come from a farm, it comes from a mine. And what's left from the mine, the soil scientists get to work with. I remember Richard Meriwether Smith was one of my teachers, and he came through the University of Missouri about the time that the last speaker, a couple minutes ago, was talking about all those people. Now I know where Dick Smith became such a great wise man. I believe, in my mind, he introduced mine soils to the world. It was interesting to hear mine as a verb used earlier today, mining soils for microorganisms. Thank you.